Welcome to The Honest Report, a weekly podcast analyzing media coverage of the Arab Israeli conflict, anti-Semitism, and radical Islamic terrorism.
They attacked by air, land, and sea, taking Israel by surprise during a major Jewish holiday. Now, 13 and a half hours after Hamas launched its audacious assault, Israel says it's at war.
Israel is at war. We didn't want this war. It was forced upon us in the most brutal and savage way. But though Israel didn't start this war, Israel will finish it.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says when it comes to destroying Hamas, quote, nobody will stop us.
Here's your host, Rob Walker.
It is a claim that is taken almost as an unassailable truth by a huge number of news media outlets around the world, that some 33,000 people have died in Gaza, and that two-thirds of them are women and children. While the source of that claim is Hamas and its quote-unquote Gaza Ministry of Health, which does not distinguish between civilians and combatants, or those killed by Israel or errant Palestinian rockets, there is an even more fundamental way to recognize the data is unreliable by statistics. Abraham Weiner, a professor of statistics and data science at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, recently penned a report where he pointed out that Hamas's casualty numbers don't add up, just from a statistical perspective alone, rendering them extraordinarily unlikely to be true. Professor Weiner joins us as a guest to walk us through his research showing how statistics have shown Hamas's claims to be propaganda. Welcome to the Honest Report podcast. Professor Abraham Weiner, welcome to the Honest Report podcast.
Yes, good to be here.
So you penned an article, or an analysis, I would call it, in March for Tablet Magazine, called How the Gaza Ministry of Health Fakes Casualty Numbers. And I obviously want to talk to you about some of the discoveries that you identified within there, but what was the impetus for writing this piece in the first place?
Okay, so the broad impetus for writing the piece is the misrepresentation of Israel's actions in Gaza by the mainstream media, by enemies of Israel, by left-wing progressives on college campuses and newspapers. And the reason why that misrepresentation is so important is the charge has been levied against Israel that it is not fighting a war, it is committing war crimes. It is committing genocide under their definition and not engaging in a defensive war against an enemy. And the statistical issue at the heart of this charge is the number of civilian casualties. And the claim is that Israel is just indiscriminately bombing Gaza and not waging a careful war against armed fighters. And they're just taking their revenge out on a defenseless population. So the data that suggests that this is a massive civilian catastrophe is played in such a way in the press to support that conjecture about Israel's actions. So what's missing in all this is the understanding that this is actually a war, and therefore there should be a distribution of casualties that matches what you'd expect to see in a war, with lots and lots of men dying, much smaller numbers of women and children. But in what is being reported is exactly the opposite. So, and this is what got me interested in the problem in the first place, is that what Hamas's Ministry of Health has been publishing almost from the very first day through their aggregators and explainers and in the West, mainly the UN, an organization called OCHA, is that the numbers of casualties are not only large, which I don't dispute, the numbers of casualties, of course, are very large. This is a terrible war, and war has consequences. But more significantly, they report that 72% of the casualties are women and children, and that exactly matches the population percentages, just about. And that is baffling to me as a statistician, meaning how can that be? How can a war that's being waged primarily against fighters have a casualty proportion by category, women, children, men, that is not what you'd expect to see? So that was the reason why I got very interested, and I wasn't the first to observe this. Other people had observed that they were missing men in the casualty statistics. There were other things that were baffling, like how do they come up with these lists so quickly? There were obviously largely widely publicized events that were fraudulent, like the hospital on October 17th in Gaza, which the Palestinian Ministry of Health claimed and quickly reported over 500 deaths. that not only had nothing to do with Israel, but it didn't have 500 deaths. So these are the things that got me interested in it, in the idea that numbers could be used to as propaganda against Israel, and numbers probably could be used to excavate and illuminate the problems. And that's what I did.
Okay, so let's evaluate, or let's dig down a little bit in terms of some of the items. Let's take a step back. When you were seeing these headlines talking about, you know, 70%+ are women and children, even before you started to do a deep dive, were there other items which sort of, you know, sent your spidey sense up, if you will, that you immediately recognized as being statistically implausible?
Well, okay, so the percentages were obviously the most obvious thing that was implausible. It just couldn't be, and that was the first thing. Other things, there was the fake spikes. There were a spike on October 17th. That was not plausible. I mean, they were reporting something, but didn't actually happen. The rapidity of which they were able to identify bodies with numbers and put out their names, that seemed rather implausible. But it wasn't until I looked at the data that I was able to find other things. And data is actually really sparse in this environment. They were putting out aggregate totals every day and rough percentages from almost the very beginning. On October 7th, they were putting numbers out. But not until the end of, towards the end of October, were more detailed numbers being released. And that happened for only somewhat of a short period of time, just under 3 weeks. And after that, things were published much more sporadically. So I decided I would try to look at the period of time where they were putting out data much more frequently and breaking it down into categories. At that point, I hadn't seen anything else that raised my hackles. There were some oddities that I had seen. People had talked about, I think even Honest Reporting had written an article noticing like negative numbers of men dying and zero numbers. That was less of a concern to me at that time because I felt, well, these are just errors. Obviously, they're in a difficult situation. How can they publish this? So that by itself was just one possibility, but not necessarily what you describe as spidey sense, what I call statistical sense tingling.
So let's evaluate some of these items. You talked about, you noticed here from October 26th, rather, until November 10th, then I want to quote from your piece. Quote, the Gaza Health Ministry released daily casualty figures that include both the total number and a specific number of women and children. And you called it this almost metronomical linearity, that there was basically an increase over this two-week period that was effectively the same every day. But that was a very short period of time. What has that looked like since then?
Okay, so it's funny because before that, it didn't look metronomically linear. And after that, they didn't release it daily. So if you don't have daily numbers, you can't really see things the way you can see them when they're daily. And in fact, they went, you know, weeks with erratic numbers. Since then, particularly in the last few months, it's tailed off much more. That's because there's much less activity in Gaza itself. So the period of time that I had, which has the data broken down, which is really important, it was extremely linear. And back before and since, it wasn't.
And so a cynic or a critic might look and say, well, you know, perhaps they were just doing some data catch-up at that stage. I mean, how significant, this is only a two-week period, now we're dealing with 27 weeks, how significant was that in identifying that these numbers are not necessarily, I mean, obviously you identified a number of issues, but that's one which has been pointed out quite frequently. How significant is that in identifying that these numbers are not trustworthy?
Well, it's interesting because that's something that people have talked about. That's this catch-up idea is something that people have brought up. But it's kind of odd because there's no other time that they have this. It jerks around extremely largely when they weren't reporting it broken down. And also, there were periods of time, I mean, they did continue to release numbers. As soon as there was a ceasefire, there was nothing released during that entire time. You'd figure if they were catching up, they would have the opportunity to figure things out over that period of time. And then afterwards, you didn't see that. So it's this idea of catch-up somehow managing to apply only to this three-week period when it seems there's no evidence anywhere else seems to be a rather odd idea, because you don't really don't see it anywhere. So now you're explaining this number with a principle that doesn't apply anywhere else. But that's usually what you get. You get all kinds of stories and narratives to support, you know, beliefs that you don't like, or to attack beliefs you don't like. And as I said, it's just one piece of evidence out of many. There's actually other things that have come up since. I think about three or four articles have been written since I published mine that have discovered even more flaws and weirdness in the data. And in fact, even today, the Hamas ministry is like reporting, we have no idea what's going on. And I don't think they ever had any idea what's going on.
So in your mind, if someone were to come to you and say, well, you know, Hamas reports that as of now, 33,500 people, 70% innocent civilians, what would you list as the top one or two biggest red flags? Because a lot of what, you know, you've, and I've read your piece a number of times, and a lot of it gets a little bit into the, more than a little bit into the weeds from a statistical standpoint. How would you plainly explain it to a layperson in terms of the one or two biggest red flags?
Yeah, so the obvious and most obvious red flag in all of this was, in which in some level is the thing that drove me to actually press the button on send on this piece, was when Hamas finally admitted that they lost 6,000 of their own fighters. And at that point, it was middle of February, so I think there was about 25,000 deaths approximately, and they had now admitted 6,000 fighters. Israel had claimed 13,000 fighters at the time. And fighters are, of course, men, right? So that immediately contradicts the notion that there's 72% women and children. Boom, just gone. That can't be. And so fundamentally, the idea that 72% women and children, which is the population percentage, which is the number you'd need to see if this was just indiscriminate bombing, is completely undermined not only by Israel's data, which says many fighters have been died, 13,000, not quite half, but close to it, but even Hamas's own numbers, which would say 20-25% are fighters. So immediately, you know this is wrong because fighters are men, and you can't have that many women and children dying if that many fighters are also dying. This is an incredible red flag, and that's the easiest thing for anyone to understand: is that Hamas has miscategorized, I would argue, deliberately fighters into the other categories to make it appear as if it's much more women and children, and therefore give the statistical imprimatur to the idea that this is indiscriminate bombing, it's genocide, it's war crime, and it's not war. So that's by far the easiest thing to explain to people. And it's being corroborated over and over again since I wrote my article.
Now, one of the biggest defenses that people, which you address, but I'd like you to do it here as well, is people have said, well, you know, Hamas's numbers have proven to be fairly, yes, the Gaza Ministry of Health is a Hamas arm, it's an arm of Hamas, but they've proven to be quite reliable on past conflicts. But you've identified that just simply doesn't work in this war.
Well, okay, not only does it not work in this war, it's not even true in past wars. I mean, I love that people say that, but that's called cherry picking. So they seem to have been roughly accurate in terms of the number of people killed. But this is not, that's never been at issue in what I've been writing. I want you to think about that carefully. I'm not arguing that 30,000 people at this point, 35,000 people, whatever they claim, is not the right number. I don't think it is the right number, but I don't think it's that far off, right? So if it's 20% lower, I would be not surprised I don't think it's that far off. So let's just take that claim out there. And in previous wars, that's the thing that Hamas or the have more or less been correct on. Now, those wars were a lot shorter and a lot smaller, and we had international observers in far larger numbers. So the idea that they would be correct about the total numbers of casualties in previous wars is not that surprising, and it doesn't necessarily extrapolate to this war where you have incredible numbers of casualties and no international observers. But let's get back to the point I just made about cherry picking. They haven't been right on the number of fighters. And that's the thing that's at issue. And in fact, in 2011, 2 years after, or 22 months after the start of Cast Lead, Haaretz reported that Hamas is now admitting almost 700 casualties of their own fighters in Cast Lead, when at the time they admitted 49. So, okay, the past numbers have not been right. in what it matters, which is the number of fighters. So that argument is so specious and self-serving that it turns my stomach. It also, you have to remember that this idea that the Hamas doesn't play down the number of fighters is something that's we've seen over and over again, and in all Arab wars against Israel, where its enemies, and that goes back to the Six-Day War with Egypt, and it goes back to the Second Intifada. They've always publicly downplayed the number of their own fighters that have died in a dramatic fashion, where they greatly overstate their military prowess. And then only years later, or months later, time goes by, that they finally admit that these things happened very differently than was reported. The famous one stories coming out of the Michael Oren's book on the Six-Day War talked about how Egypt for 6 days was being fed lies about how much destruction they were wreaking on the Israeli army, and how Egyptian soldiers were triumphant and nobody was dying. And then, of course, that was exactly the opposite is what happened. So the idea that Hamas would underreport its numbers of casualties of its fighters and hasn't done that consistently in the past is just nonsense.
So what when the dust settles then, what do you, and who knows when that will happen, what do you expect the figures will show?
When it's all done, you'll see about 1.5 civilian casualties to about one fighter, maybe less, somewhere between 1.1 and 1.5. And that will show that Israel has executed a somewhat remarkable, if you trust Robert Spencer, the military historian from West Point, would claim that this is urban warfare at its finest in terms of minimizing civilian casualties, which I will state again, has been tragic. This is not an attempt to minimize the civilian extent of the civilian casualties. They are large, but they're not indiscriminate and they're not disproportionate to the military gain, which means this is a war and it's not a war crime. And that's hugely different. And anytime someone accuses Israel of a war crime, they almost certainly are building that accusation on the top of garbage numbers.
Professor Weiner, thank you so much for your time and expertise and helping us understand a little bit more of the thought process that you put into this, really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much again.
You're welcome.
And that's today's edition of the Honest Report podcast. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to our mailing list, our podcast channel, and follow us on social media for the most up-to-date news. If you like what you've heard, please consider a donation to support our continued efforts at www.honestreporting.ca/donate. Until next time, thank you so much for listening.